This is Digital Story Podcast number 855, August 9th, 2022. Today's theme is Comeback Kid. Camera industry may have weathered the storm. I'm Derek Story. What started with the invasion of the smartphones was compounded by the pandemic, supply chain shortages, bad weather, and an expensive shift to mirrorless technology. But it appears that the camera industry, catering to enthusiasts and pros alike, are seeing the future cast in a more optimistic light. And regardless of which brand you prefer, this is good news. More detail on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. It's great every now and then when you get to report good news, isn't it? Yes. All right. So different than so many other things that we're going through right now. But it's actually looking just cautiously optimistic in the world of enthusiasts and pro cameras. And I'm going, well, here's a headline, there's a headline, I read a story here, read a story there. And then finally, this morning, I'm going, you know what, there's like quite a few of these. So let's talk about them as a whole, because they, for me anyway, they represent different facets of this diamond that's starting to sparkle a bit. And I'm going, you know what, this is nice. Let's talk about some good news in our camera industry. So I'm going to go through just a few stories here and just talk about this diamond from this facet, and we'll see how we feel at the end of it. But I have a feeling we're going to be smiling. All right, well, here we go. Canon says the camera market is looking up, shares plan for DSLRs. This one is on F-stoppers, and of course I have the links to all of these in the show notes. So you can click on them and read the whole stories. I'm just going to give you some excerpts here. It's no secret that the smartphone has decimated the camera industry for the past decade, but according to Canon, the market may have finally bottomed out, and there might now be reason to look up. It turns out that even DSLRs aren't dead just yet. Here's a quote from Canon. Going forward, we expect the professional and advanced amateur segment to expand further and that products will become more highly developed. Accordingly, we expect the overall market to grow from now on, end quote. And Canon also said in this statement that they will continue to supply DSLRs for as long as the demand exists. The logical conclusion to this is that we're probably not going to see new DSLRs, right? They're not going to develop a new pro or enthusiast digital single lens reflex. However, they will probably keep manufacturing the ones that are available. And those cameras are awfully good, which means that if you prefer DSLRs or if your workflow is set up for them, if you're a pro, then you'll probably be able to get a replacement body, replacement parts, repairs, all that kind of stuff in the foreseeable future. And that is great news that allows people to use the tools they want instead of just yanking them away from them because, you know, okay, we're all shooting mirrorless now, or we're all doing this, or we're all doing that. So that's actually two bits of good news in one piece there. So that is Canon, and they say that the camera market is looking up. Here's another one. Nikon's Q1 results show imaging products profits up 48% year over year, revenue nearly matching pre-pandemic results. This one's from DP Review. Nikon has announced the financial results for the first quarter of its 2023 fiscal year, revealing increased revenue and operating year over year in nearly every segment, including its imaging products business. Nikon's presentation materials show the revenue and operating profit of its imaging products business was at 61.2 billion yen and 13.6 billion yen, respectively, for Q1 fiscal year 2023. That's an increase of 22.4% and 47.8%, respectively, compared to Q1 fiscal year 2022. Isolated, that's an impressive increase, but Nikon hasn't necessarily had the best couple of years throughout the pandemic. So how does it compare to Nikon's pre-pandemic numbers? Well, it turns out fairly well. Financial results aren't necessarily a crystal ball into the future, but Nikon appears to have weathered the brutal economic conditions of the past few years and has set its imaging products business for a sustainable future, even as only a fraction of what it was in the peak of the Canon-Nikon days. So that, again, I mean, the numbers for Nikon, if you recall, in 2020, 2021 even, early part, were not very good, and people began to question, is Nikon going to make it? Of course, people love to do that, right? They love to say, you know, you have a couple down quarters, and boy, people start counting you out, right? Yeah, all right. Yay, thanks for the faith, kids. But the numbers for Nikon were not looking good at all. And they stuck with it. They came out with their wonderful flagship camera. They kept producing lenses. Their mirrorless lineup looks fantastic. And they're just chipping away. They're very determined. They're producing quality stuff. And now the numbers are starting to catch up to the work that they did. And just like with Canon, I mean, Nikon and Canon were behind in the mirrorless game, at least in terms of releases. I mean, we had Panasonic and we had Olympus and Fujifilm cranking stuff out. Sony, of course. And Canon and Nikon just seemed a little slow in the uptake. That hurt them. Now, Canon seemed to have recovered faster or made the turnaround faster, but they're a bigger company, right? They're a bigger company. They have more revenue, more R&D, so that makes sense. But to see Nikon now shoring up its numbers and feeling cautiously optimistic about the future, again, those two feeling good, that's good for the whole industry. It's good for the whole industry, and I'm really happy to read that. Sigma says its full-frame Foveon X3 sensor should be ready sometime this year. This is another piece from DP Review. In a recent video interview published by YouTube, Sigma Corporation CEO confirmed the company is working on a full-frame Foveon sensor that should make its debut, at least in prototype form, by the end of the year. The 17-minute interview covers an array of topics, including Sigma's strategy throughout the pandemic, its plans to continue supporting DSLR users, and other topics. One of the more interesting tidbits, however, comes around the 8-minute mark, wherein the host asks the CEO if there's any update on the company's 3-layer Foveon sensor. In response, we are still working on it and are working on a prototype of the 3-layer X3 sensor that should be available sometime this year. He goes on to say the Foveon X3 sensor is not a very versatile sensor, specifically pointing out its low light performance, but if there is a good amount of light, the camera can create very beautiful and impressive photos. I have to smile a little bit when Sigma talks about the Foveon sensor because, honestly, I can't really figure out why they stick with this thing. I mean, it is a good sensor in the right circumstances, right? I've tested it, and it can produce fantastic images, of course. So they just came out with two new lenses today, as a matter of fact, a 20mm and a 24mm f1.4 art lenses for Sony cameras. And, you know, these lenses look fantastic. They are reasonably priced for a high-end lens, $799 and $899 respectively. And they're just doing such a great job in the lens world. I mean, there was a time when Sigma lenses were not really highly regarded, and they have totally turned that around. And their high-end lenses are highly respected, sometimes outperforming, you know, the name brands, you know, the Nikons and Canons of the world. So why they continue to put money into the Foveon sensor, it must be just one of those pet projects that you enjoy. You know what I mean? You know, like, we want to have a camera. We don't want to be just a lens manufacturer. We want to have a camera too. This is a sensor we developed and we like it. On that level, I get it. The reason why I included this in the story, because if they're continuing to work on that camera, the Foveon sensor, then that tells you that they are optimistic about the future. Because if you can afford to have a pet project, then that means you're fairly confident about the company's direction moving forward that allows them to do that. If that's the case, then head on and let's see what you produce. You know, it'll be fun to read about it. It might even be fun to shoot with it if I get a chance. But I have to say that I think they're doing a fantastic job with their optics. Sigma has really impressed me, you know, over the last 7, 8, 9 years. And I just want them to keep going, just keep going. And if they happen to squeeze out an interesting camera along the way, then all right, go do it. Panasonic and Leica to launch jointly developed mirrorless camera. This is from Petapixel. This is from a report. And as part of that report, the publication spoke with Panasonic, which confirmed that not only has it ceased production of Lumix brand compact cameras, but that it would also be focusing on high end of the market, which includes leveraging its partnership with Leica to produce a co-developed mirrorless camera next year. It's not clear how the new camera will fit in with Panasonic's or Leica's current full-frame offerings. The two companies both produce mirrorless L-mount cameras that exist in that high-end space, and whether or not the co-developed camera will replace both lines or be in addition to them was not revealed. I'm guessing it's going to be in addition to them and not replace either one. Now, Leica and Panasonic, of course, have been working together for a long time. And, you know, there's been a lot of Leica glass or Leica approved glass on Panasonic cameras. And they are cooperating right now in the full frame space. Them producing a camera together, that's not shocking news to me, but it is good news to me. Again, because that's moving forward into new territory. You don't do that unless you have some confidence that you're going to be able to pull it off. And I think both companies are. Leica is just coming off its best year ever. And that was something that I reported in an earlier podcast. Panasonic continues to chip away and do well. And its latest Micro Four Thirds camera also is getting very good reviews. So, I mean, there's a lot going on here. I hate to see the compact Panasonics go away, the high-end ones. And those did have Leica lenses on them because the Lumix cameras were quite good. So this jointly developed mirrorless camera, this possible jointly developed mirrorless camera is very interesting to me. And if they look for some sort of sweet spot in between their two independent brands, that could be fascinating. And it's certainly good news that they're even thinking about it or making plans toward it. We'll see what happens in the upcoming months. Our wish list for the new OM System OM5, and this is from the Foblographer. OM System OM1 broke away from the Olympus name to deliver a list of innovative features in a small package. That list, which includes quad pixel autofocus, IP53 rated weather sealing, and 50 frames per second speed, may be exactly what Micro Four Thirds system needs to remain relevant in an industry now teeming with full-frame bodies. But if the OM1 is the company's flagship, what's next for the former Olympus mid-range bodies? Early reports suggest that an OM5 is coming this fall. These reports call for the OM5 to have the same sensor and battery as the OM1, but with a 15 frames per second burst speed. OM Digital Solutions has not commented on those reports, and as such, those details remain speculative. But if I could pick and choose what a successor to the Olympus EM5 Mark III looks like, There are a handful of features that I'd love to see, a mix of OM1 and EM5 Mark III features in a smaller, more affordable body. And then he goes on to talk about those features. You know, he wants that really great weather sealing and that nice focusing and a lot of the good stuff that we have with the OM1. Now, the reason why I included this story is because, well, it wasn't that long ago that everyone thought that Olympus was in the ash can, right? Yeah, you know, we know what happens when you break off a division from your company and sell it to somebody else, then it just goes away. And that hasn't happened at all. My favorite Olympus-made camera of all time, or OM system camera now, is the current camera that I have. The OM1 is fantastic. So I think it's safe to say that that decision wasn't a terrible one and that there is some promise moving forward. And we're already hearing some rumblings about the EM5, what would be probably the Mark IV. So here we go. More cautiously good news on the OM front. And if indeed they do come out with another camera later this year, and if indeed it lives up to the expectations of the audience, Micro Four Thirds shooters, then I think it would be even safer to say that OM System, OM Digital Solutions, really has some momentum and will probably be around for quite a while. And I would love for that to happen. So final thoughts. So in addition to the stories I've already mentioned, there's lots more great stuff happening. Fujifilm, Tamron and others. Fujifilm just had a great summit a couple months ago, released new cameras and a lens roadmap and some new glass. And I feel like that mirrorless has been the technology that sort of pushed the camera industry forward. They needed something. They needed something different. They needed something special. And the big guys needed to move away from DSLRs. And I feel like the technology developed by Olympus, Panasonic, Sony, and Fujifilm has helped the industry as a whole move forward. And now Canon and Nikon, you know, they're cooking with some serious gas. And I think, you know, I'm feeling optimistic about what we're going to see in the second half of this year. And then I'm feeling very good about 2023. And I just thought that I would share some of that good news with you today. Peak Design collaborates with Huckleberry in limited edition travel backpack. And you can read this entire article on Petapixel. Do not go to this article if you don't want to be tempted to buy a new bag. I'll tell you that right now. Let me read you what they say here in the article, and there's a video that goes with it, a video review of it that is terrific, okay? But here's what the article says. The backpack shares a lot in common with the original travel backpack with one major notable exception, the exterior. The collaboration backpack is available in one color, a yellow called Coyote, and is made from what the two brands describe as premium DWR-coated X-Pack material, which is supposedly extremely durable and waterproof. X-Pack is a lightweight fabric that's made with several layers that are laminated together into one sheet, nylon fabric, polyester mesh, and waterproof film. As described by the manufacturer, Dimension Polyant, the resulting material is designed to be both rugged and comes from a business aimed at sustainability. The use of X-Pack means that the exterior of the Peak Design and Huckleberry collaboration bag is waterproof, not water resistant. While the bag cannot be submerged and stay totally dry on the inside, the water resistant zippers have a limit to how much water they can prevent from seeping through. The bag will often not require the typical rain cover other backpacks need for a majority of wet weather scenarios. Like the original, the collaboration backpack has dedicated laptop and tablet sleeves, has padded shoulder straps that pack away. And by the way, that pack away is very ingenious. They can pack totally away so that they're not dangling or hanging with a very clever system. It's fantastic. grab handles at multiple locations on the bag. And when they say multiple locations, not really doing it justice. It has grab handles on all four sides and the back. So no matter where this bag is stashed, you have a grab handle to pull it, and fits under an airline seat or in an overhead compartment. It is also built sustainably with a carbon neutral, fair trade certified manufacturing process. The Huckberry and Peak Design X-Pack Travel Backpack is available directly from Huckberry, limited one per person, for $260, which is $30 more than the standard $230 30-liter travel backpack. The thing that really attracted me to this backpack when I looked at it and when I watched the video review of it is that when you first look at it on the outside, it's very sleek. It has a very clean design. The fabric looks beautiful. This coyote colorway is a really nice color. It has all the features you need, but it's not busy or messy. It's really beautifully designed. However, once you get into it, it does have all the things that most of us will want in a backpack. It has multiple stash areas that are easily accessible. When you open up the backpack, it has built in to the lid some very nice compartments where, for instance, if you want to use it as an overnight bag, you could put your toiletries and stuff like that in there. It has a well-designed laptop sleeve, has a place to stash a tablet. It's really well done. And I mentioned earlier those hideaway backpack straps. They put the top of the straps on a hinge system, so, or they rotate actually, so that, you know, they're very sturdy. They're attached to the bag very nicely, but you can rotate them behind kind of this pad that has some room for the straps behind it. So then they're out of the way. And since this bag doesn't have anything else dangling off it, now you have this very clean bag that you can grab a handle on any side of it and carry it as well. One of the handles on the back can also serve as a trolley sleeve to slide over the handle of your suitcase. And then the other thing that I always worry about on bags that have a high water resistance and those zippers is that the zippers are hard to use. These zippers, at least when I watched them in the video, were very smooth, very smooth. So it's not like you're giving performance up to have a zipper that is highly, highly water resistant. It's a good looking bag. The material is very innovative, but yet has a very high-tech look. But because of the color, then suddenly it also has, I'm not a camera bag, I'm not a tech bag, I'm just a cool backpack kind of vibe to it. And so, you know, you could wear it with a cowboy hat and some boots, and you would look just great that way. So I was really impressed with it. Now, as you recall, I had a podcast, it's been a little bit now, not that long ago, about whittling my entire bag collection down to 6 bags, which I've done. So now my rule is if I add a new bag to the mix, I have to get rid of one of my bags. And I have the Lopro Pro Tactic bag. I like this bag a lot, and it basically serves the same purpose as this Huckberry / Peak Design bag. And I'm still liking my Pro Tactic, so I'm going to hang on to that, and I'm going to resist spending any money for this bag. But I tell you, when I look at it, you know, and when I watch the review, and the review is terrific. It's about 8 minutes, and it's really well done. Then I just have to allow myself that moment where I go, boy, I could, man, all right, if I did this and I could come up with the $260 for it, and then I would sell the other bag, and, you know, you go through all the scenarios. I let those scenarios play out, and I'll just take a deep breath, and I'll stick with what I have. But some of you who may be looking for a bag like this, this is one to lust over if indeed you decide to pass on it and not add another bag to your collection. The best instant cameras that you can buy right now. And this is an article from The Verge. I have the link in the show notes. I just thought this was fun because they really do a nice review of the different instant film cameras available right now, one of which I have, which I'll tell you in a minute. And let me just read you their intro here, and then I will give you the cameras that they think are the best going right now. Even with the ability to take excellent photos with our phones and instantly share them across the world, there's something magical about the old school instant camera. With just a click of a button, you can capture a moment in a photo that you can see and touch almost immediately. Images captured by the instant camera aren't as pristine or perfect as modern digital cameras, but these soft images and imperfections are often a big part of the allure. Yet not all instant cameras are the same, and some of them are better suited for different needs and budgets. That's why we tested some of the most popular instant cameras on the market from brands like Fujifilm, Polaroid, and Kodak. All the models featured in our best instant camera guide here are enjoyable to use, but each offers a different set of features at a different price point. As a result, some are more appropriate for a child or a budding photographer, while others are more advanced and provide added creative control. When it comes down to it, though, we consider print quality, ease of use, and affordability to be the hallmarks of a quality shooter. That's why we picked Fujifilm's Instax Mini 11 as the best instant camera for most people, as it ticks all three boxes wonderfully. If you're looking for more creative control and features like filters, however, the Instax Mini Evo is our choice. One that boasts great image quality and allows you to choose which photos you'd like to print. Other instant cameras like Polaroid's Now Plus and Kodak's Mini Retro 3 also offer a variety of advanced creative modes for those who desire more. So I'm shooting with the Instax Mini Evo, and I absolutely love that camera. I've had it for a while now, and I love it just as much today as when I first got it. So that's my pick, but here's the cameras on the list. Here's the complete list. And then if you go to the article on The Verge, they have a nice write-up about each camera, and you can get into all the details and kind of who they feel that camera is best for. But the list is Fujifilm's Instax Mini 11, Fujifilm Instax Mini Evo, Kodak MiniShot 3 Retro, Polaroid Now Plus, and Polaroid Go. Those are their favorite instant cameras right now. And like I said, the thing that I really like about the Mini Evo is that if I take a picture with it, I don't have to print it. So I can look at it on the back of the LCD. I can keep it as a digital file. And if I want, I can print it. And if I want to make five prints of it, if it's a group shot at a party, then I can make five prints of it. And it just seems so smart. Plus, I really do like all the filters and different creative options for that camera. So that's why I really prefer that camera. But these other cameras are worth a look too. And if you're thinking about adding instant camera, maybe you've got some parties or some family events coming up, which they're great for, take a look at this article and see what you think. All right, a little virtual camera club news. Inner Circle members, a big thanks to those who support our podcast and our efforts. We are having a blast at our new Inner Circle Hangout on Derek Story Online. It's a private group I've set up. So if you join the Inner Circle, then once I see that you've joined the Inner Circle via our Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, then I will add you to the site over at Derek Story Online. If you're already an Inner Circle member, have been for a long time, and you've never got around to going over to Derek Story Online and decide that you want to, it's best to send me a note, because you did get an email way back when sometime, but it's probably way buried. And you probably don't know where that link is anymore. So if you are an Inner Circle member and you decide that you want to participate in Derek Story Online, which I highly recommend, just go ahead and send me an email, and I'll make sure that I get you added to that group. We hand add to that group. It's an exclusive group, and we hand add to that group one person at a time. So everyone in there is an Inner Circle member, and it's a blast. And by the way, those of you who are Inner Circle members, we're going to have a new photo challenge coming up this week, and I think you're going to like it. So stay tuned for that. A big thanks to all our Inner Circle members. And if you want to join us, just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. You can nose around there, and you can also sign up for the Inner Circle right there. I hope you join us. Give a big shout out to our friends at Red River Paper. They are the one-stop shopping for inkjet printers. And there you can get your ink, you can get your paper, you can get everything that you need. So as I've been talking over the last couple months now, that I've been reworking my studio. And part of that has been just organizing my printing paper so I have easier access to it. Because, you know, I'd keep a stack over here and I'd keep a stack over there. Printer would be over there, you know, that kind of thing. And sometimes I was just settling for the paper I could get to fastest, which I'm going, you know, come on. I know I have some Arctic Polar Luster, you know, and I was just too lazy to go looking for it. So I got all of my Red River paper organized as part of this redesign. And I've been reorganizing just about every aspect of my studio. And it is so cool now having it all in one place, going from 13 by 19 all the way down to 4 by 6, my greeting card stock, everything. And when I just stand back and look at it, I just go, you know, there is so much potential right here in this stack of boxes. It's really exciting. But it also has me now able to always get to the right stock that I want for the project. And, you know, the paper has a huge influence on what image comes out of the printer. And you want the right paper for the image that you're working on. You can learn more about all those surfaces by clicking on the tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story, the Red River paper tile. And they will tell you, for landscapes, for portraits, for urban, for greeting cards, here's what to look at, here's what to consider. And then get some options, because having those options for your printing then allows you to customize the image so what comes out of the printer is exactly what you want. A big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast, and they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Good news, optimistic for things to come. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Until then, until you come back and join me next week, stay safe, be creative, take some great pictures. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.